Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report podcast. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Our podcast is brought to you by Bell. Since 1935, Bell has been redefining flight. Learn more about its pioneering spirit at bellflight.com. We're continuing our coverage of the Air Force Association's annual Airspace Cyber Conference and Trade Show, this year conducted virtually. The conference and trade show was last week, but we still have a lot of great U.S. Air Force leaders to talk to, and we're talking to one today, United States Air Force Major General Chris Azzano, the commander of the U.S. Air Force Test Center, headquartered at Edwards Air Force Base in the Antelope Valley of Southern California, but who also oversees Eglin Air Force Base in Florida and Arnold Air Force Base in Tennessee, to three instrumental organizations in the Air Force's flight test crown. Or I should say test crown. He's an experimental test pilot who leads a force of 18,000 and oversees a budget of $31 billion. Sir, it's absolutely great to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Vago, thank you so much for your time. Always enjoy the conversations we have. You are a great gift to our ability to tell the story and to get the word out there and to increase advocacy for the things that we know and appreciate that really contribute to national defense. So thanks for having me on today.
Sir, it's an honor and pleasure. And as I said, one of the treats of my career has been covering the test community and meeting some of the greatest test pilots in history. And I think that there's a tendency of remembering, obviously, the giant names, but also there are people who are doing just extraordinary things, both classified and unclassified, on a daily basis. And it's just a pleasure talking to you because it is such an exciting time. Before we get started, our global coverage is sponsored by Leonardo DRS. Northrop Grumman sponsors our weekly cyber report and our cyber coverage overall. Fincantieri Marinette Marine sponsors our naval coverage. General Atomics Aeronautical Systems sponsors our coverage of strategy. And of course, Bell sponsors this podcast. Sir, Air Force Acquisition Executive Dr. Will Roper revealed the service's next generation air dominance aircraft has gone from design to flying article in about a year, setting records along the way. Your folks, of course, are embedded in every major program, and that program is no exception. And the flight happened at one of your test facilities, although I understand that a lot of it is highly classified. Dr. Roper wanted to get this message out to show the world that the United States Air Force can do very, very big things very fast. Tell us what you can about the test and how this environment is fundamentally changing how you guys operate to get to that accelerated cycle speed that we've heard Air Force leaders talk about, especially General C.Q. Brown, the 22nd Chief of the United States Air Force, with his accelerate change or lose. And obviously, Dr. Roper, who's been pushing this story since he was leading the Strategic Capabilities Office at OSD.
Well, I'll just start by saying you mentioned a number of legends of test, and you also indicated that there are lots of people still serving their country honorably in the same way. And I love talking about the Air Force Test Center, the test community in general, because of the things that we do every day. New, different, dangerous, absolutely critical for national defense. And so to be associated with these people and to have a chance to lead them is an absolute thrill. And you mentioned names like Scott Crossfield and Chuck Yeager and so many others. Kelly Johnson and some of the other legends. I would just offer that this very day there are people out there that are of equal stature that history is going to smile on when they see some of the accomplishments they've made. And as you know, yes, Dr. Roper at AFA revealed that the Air Force has flown a full-scale flight demonstrator for the NGAD, the Next Generation Air Dominance portfolio of technologies. A particular event as he mentioned, was important because of some of the things it demonstrated in terms of our ability to develop capabilities. What I'd really like to focus on, though, is less about the particular of the full-scale flight demonstrator, and more on the concept of NGAD and how that's really leading to a change in the way we view warfighting of the future. And it really falls into the category of taking the the limited resources that we have and doing things better and faster in the way we develop systems. And at some point, I'm going to throw out a few thoughts about join all domain operations and what is now being known as JADC2. But NGAD in particular is exciting because that is going to be an element of that network that provides some absolutely critical battlefield capabilities. And when you consider the way the environment of the future is going to look when we have joint all domain operations, where we're integrating airspace and cyber and then the other joint services outside of the Air and Space Force, it's really about creating a common operating picture where we can draw every possible piece of useful information in to a grid and distribute it to all of the potential capabilities that can be used to create an effect on the battlefield. And as we know, the battlefield of the future isn't just going to be confined to the ground and to the aircraft flying over it. It's going to be all about space and cyber and everything on the sea and undersea. It's going to be an incredibly complex environment. So to be able to create that common operating picture, to be able to draw on the capabilities that the NGAD portfolio of technologies is going to contribute will be absolutely critical. What's exciting about the way we're doing tests today is we are beginning to leverage in a new way some of the digital engineering techniques that we've been using for years. One of the things that I point out regularly is the reason we are able to continue and have been over decades to advance technology and to do things with aircraft that are new and different and dangerous and do them safely as we develop these aircraft is because for decades now, we've been relying on digital engineering to support those efforts. We've been relying on digital engineering to develop high fidelity models, high fidelity simulations to reduce the risk of actual flight tests and at times to actually reduce the amount of tests that we need to do, all in a way that still contributes to a system that is going to be a keystone for combat capability. So that's exciting. But what we're seeing now today with digital engineering, and it's playing out in NGAD as well, is a way to use these digital models to help more expeditiously track a change in the configuration or a system on board a particular aircraft and what that means for the overall grid, if you will, for the overall architecture of this new technology, the new concept of joint all domain operations. So we can look and see where we have holes in our warfighting capability and then assess through this modeling through these digital engineering techniques where we need to fill them and then make changes to these systems. And as you know, Dr. Roper has spoken at great length about why it will be so important to rapidly develop and evolve these systems that are really going to be less about the aircraft and more about their capability, the ability to integrate those systems and produce the desired information to populate that common operating picture. So the exciting part of this, I know people get excited about air vehicles and demonstrators and flight tests, and they should. But we are really moving into an age where we are integrating test in a unique way, and that we're incorporating a lot more cyber techniques. As you know, the Air Force has been working space capabilities for many, many years, and we now have an independent space force that is taking the fight to space. And it's exciting to see how that may go. It's also really a call to action for us, because we know if we're not prepared to win the war in space, then one of our adversaries will be. And so it's an exciting time to be involved in this multi-domain capability development, and NGAD obviously is going to be a big part of that. And General Kelly had some great comments at AFA about how that is going to help us to populate the network, if you will, of joint all domain operations. I think the key to go ahead, sir.
Well, I was going to say, so what's the key to moving at that accelerated speed? You're an experimental test pilot. You've worked on highly classified systems and operated them. So on the development side, as well as on the operational side of things, what are the keys to moving fast, and how is it changing how you're organized and how you're executing? Right? Because at the end of the day, we've gotten used to development programs that are decades long, And what we're trying to do is get into development programs that are actually measured in maybe a few short years, back to the heyday of how we were able to roll capability out very, very quickly, even if that meant drawing off of parts bins and capabilities and subsystems that we already had in hand, for example.
Well, a great question. And I think this really speaks to the wisdom behind Dr. Roper's approach to the digital century series, the E-series of next generation aircraft. What we have done in the past traditionally is we take an aircraft that has got an extensive list of requirements. We understand, we believe, the environment in which it's going to need to operate, and we develop toward that. And it takes a lot of time to get to the 95% solution. I think the answer going forward is we have to rapidly field capabilities that we know we are going to evolve. So we don't have to have that perfect capability. We have to have something that suits a particular mission, but more importantly, can help populate that network that is fundamental to joint all domain operations. And then we field it, and then we rapidly evolve it. All of that requires exceptional risk management. And when I talk about risk management, it's not just relative to the dangers of operating in a hostile environment like we do with our aircraft. It's about managing the risk of an evolving threat. It's about managing our national treasure to try to target it in the right place in the areas of highest return on investment. It's about time management and risk management and program risk management. So all of those come together in a way that creates quite a challenge for the people who acquire these systems. But I really do believe that we're onto something here with harnessing some of the newer digital engineering techniques, which can drive rapid spiraling, rapid prototyping, and rapid evolution of some of these capabilities. And in the past, when you needed a new, say, air dominance aircraft or a new close air support aircraft, it would take you quite a few years to define the requirements to build the aircraft, to prove its suitability for the mission, and to move on. And now we're to the point where we're using digital techniques to make those changes quickly, to understand the effects that will ripple through the life cycle of these aircraft, but also to be able to rapidly change the onboard systems to help us populate that network that is part of joint all domain operations. So it's really harnessing some novel new ideas about some of the capabilities, digital engineering capabilities we've had for decades, and using that to speed the development cycle. But I will emphasize that the hard work of doing the development and integration of these systems still has to be done. Anytime we're dealing with things that are as challenging as some of these systems are, we need to make sure that when things work well, we know why, and we can make that repeatable. And when things don't work well, we need to understand why so we can fix them. All that requires a very disciplined, rigorous approach in the test environment, which obviously leads to, and it really is why we have one of our fundamentals being the exceptional risk management that characterizes the force.
Let me ask you about the line between physical test and electronic test, and how the joint simulation environment is so important. Obviously, that's a national priority. Once upon a time, when it was Muroc Army Airfield, somebody had to be physically eyes on to be able to see what you were working on. Obviously, throughout the Cold War, satellite capabilities got better. You roughly knew when satellites were coming over. Now we're in a sort of a ubiquitous surveillance environment. What does this all domain test environment need to look like? And how does it need to connect to a flight test business that is actually dramatically different, right? The flight tests are validating the models increasingly. Talk to us about what this entire ecosystem needs to look like, because what folks are trying to achieve is to create a synthetic, highly realistic environment in which you can test an aircraft. The maintainer has a role, the armorer has a role, the mission planners have a role. You're actually able to shape operational doctrine because of the fidelity, right? How you're replicating electronically the capabilities of these systems and how they all play together. What does this need to look like, and how does it need to connect to the physical world?
Well, as you well know, in the past, the way we would validate that a system was going to perform the way we needed it to in combat, we would do open air testing. We do extensive build up testing where we look at the capabilities of a system in a benign environment, a very simple environment, and we would assess, and then we would make the environment more and more complex. And that open air testing gave us a real good feeling that on the first night of the war, the system would function as we needed it to function in an environment that was just not nearly as complex as it is today. For many years now, we've been talking about the importance of modeling and simulation and the desire eventually to leverage modeling and simulation to help us shrink developmental timelines and help us to develop more capable systems. The problem is we've always lacked the full confidence in our modeling and simulation capability. And it's proved out time and again that as well as our best models work, we still need to correct them with real world information as we go through and do open air testing. Where I think we are today is at a really exciting point where we're going to see the confluence of our traditional reliance on open air testing with the desire really to leverage the latest and greatest modeling and simulation. And you mentioned the joint simulation environment, which is the architecture that's being developed both by the Navy and the Air Force to really be the backbone of the future for that environment, to really help to leverage live, virtual, and constructive developmental environments to create a couple of things we need. You already mentioned the need to and the challenge of developing things in secrecy. But another one that I would argue is equally important is our ability to replicate the complexity of the combat environment as we're developing these systems and as we're training with these systems. And that's the beauty of the future. And again, this is a bit of a long range vision, but it really where I think we need to go. And that is to take this forward, the joint simulation, a live virtual constructive environment, to a point where we can integrate open air testing with a lot of the environment that resides on server banks and create the kind of dense threat environments that we need to prove out our systems and to create the kind of scenarios that will allow the operators to train and be ready for night one of the war. And if we do the development of the joint simulation environment properly, that's where we'll get. We will end up where we've got a live virtual constructive capability that gives us high confidence. As a lifelong tester and open air tester, I'm not sure that we will ever reach the point where we don't do any open air or physical world development. But I do think we can get to the point where we have much higher confidence because we've integrated a lot of the capabilities, a lot of the advanced models that will reside on server banks in the future. So it's an exciting time. We're trying to steer the program in the right direction. You may or may not know that for the Air Force side of JSC, the test center is the program office. And so we are directly engaged with the Air Force Warfare Center to make sure that we're moving this in the right direction. And the exciting progress we've seen lately is the stand-up of a facility, which we're going to break ground on at Nellis Air Force Base with General Corcoran and the Warfare Center sometime later this fall. And then early in 21, we're going to break ground on a facility here at Edwards also. And these facilities are going to host numerous high-fidelity simulators that will be linked and are really going to form the initial framework, if you will, the initial skeleton of this environment. We're going to build on that. But I will add that the development of the architecture, the IT backbone that serves this whole concept, is very encouraging at this point.
How far away are we, if you could give me sort of a sense in years, before we can get to that kind of a high fidelity joint all domain testing capability? Because obviously concepts development in a great power competition era is critical, especially being able to do so away from prying eyes. From your standpoint, how many years out are we? Is this a 5-year, 2-year, 10-year? What time horizon should be thinking? Because I know that accelerating it is also key.
Well, to get to that capability development nirvana that I just mentioned, we're a number of years off for that. But what I need to emphasize is that we are doing joint all-domain operations development today. We are doing developmental tests, really integrated developmental and operational tests through a number of our recurring flags, actually. They're similar to the red flag type event that happens at Nellis for training, advanced training. But this is more of a focus on developing capabilities, and we have stood up a capability a few years ago called Orange Flag, and that the orange is the color is taken from a lot of the orange wire that runs through our developmental test aircraft, the wire that indicates what is a non-standard element of that aircraft, which you'd appreciate as a historian.
By the way, that is very, very cool.
Well, it's part of our culture, and we're very proud of it. So Orange Flag has demonstrated some incredible success, and now down on the Gulf Coast, we are beginning to kick off Emerald Flag, and that's going to be hosted by our wing at Eglin, but it's going to be very similar in mindset. And what we found out a few years ago, it's if we build it, they will come. We started off with a fairly small scenario that involved a few aircraft between Edwards and Nellis, and advertised it, and everybody wanted to play because they realized the importance of doing all domain testing, of doing high density testing and development of systems in an environment that was more accurate, more representative of a high density threat environment. And we've seen some great results from that. I'll tell you, the demand signal for that kind of testing and open air training, advanced training, is so strong that I recently stood up a new unit within the Air Force Test Center, and we're calling it the Multi-Domain Test Force. It's a fairly small organization, but it is going to help guide these two flag events. It will help support some of the ABMS and JADC2 demonstrations that are going on across the services, and we're excited about it because it's not a functionally specific test force like we typically have for a new fighter jet or for the B-21 or the KC-46. It's more about integrating all of the expertise that resides across the test community, all of the expertise in the operational community, to help us develop systems in a way that we know they need to develop in order to directly contribute to joint all domain operations. So that you'll hear more about the MDTF. We're going to have a rollout ceremony here in a few weeks, but I'm really excited about the future. It's something that we have been filling with stopgap measures for years, and we're going to formalize it now. And the teams are already talking, and all I really need to do is get out of the way and let them run with it. Let them integrate the talent and the expertise that resides in our community already. So a long answer just to say we are already doing that today, and we're excited about the results. We're learning a ton. But really where we go in the future, and it may be another 5 to 10 years before we reach that level of confidence in LVC, open air, and modeling and simulation development that let us do what I mentioned earlier. But it's not far off. We're moving rapidly in that direction.
The September 3, 2020 test was extraordinary, obviously using Army howitzers to shoot down simulated cruise missiles. Incredible demonstration of ABMS and also JADC2, and it's solving a very, very thorny problem, right? How to defend, or more economically or efficiently defend, forward air bases, for example. And I think that folks have a tendency of sometimes they know NGAD, they know B-21, 46, hypersonic weapons. Obviously, Holloman Air Force Base is one of the world's true jewels in terms of having the extraordinary capabilities they have there. So you talked about interdisciplinary. That interdisciplinary nature is now extending. You're working more closely with the Navy, for example, always a very, very close relationship with the folks at Pax River, but that relationship is deepening. Working more closely in terms of what the Army test and evaluation folks are doing. Talk to us about how you're all learning from one another to try to avoid reinventing wheels, right? I mean, that's one of the things that we're very, very good at, is we're very, very innovative, but then again, we also end up sort of replicating effort. How is this teaching you? What are you learning from all of these interdisciplinary things that are making the entire enterprise better and more efficient?
Well, you've hit on one of the real challenges of integrating joint operations, and it's been an emphasis of DoD going back to Goldwater Nichols and before. The balance there is maintaining preserving the service cultures which are so important to the way we view combat operations, but at the same time making sure that we're all integrated, we're all interoperable, and we're all striving toward the same objectives, and we're avoiding duplicative efforts, because there's just not we just don't have the resources to waste even a dime or a person on something that's already being done elsewhere. And I think that's the exciting thing behind the whole concept of JADC2, joint all domain operations. And what the ABMS demonstration number 2 back in the first week of September taught us, and that is that there is an urgent need for joint all domain operations with JADC2, joint all domain command and control, as the enabler of that. It's the grid, it's the decision in a machine enabled decision speed that will require all sorts of information to be run through algorithms to generate combat alternatives for the combatant commander. It's exciting to see where that's going. The scenario that was developed for the demo, the ABMS number 2 demo in September, was an extraordinary scenario, very complex. And it really illustrated the importance of getting the right information from a grid that is integrating many, many sources to the right shooter to achieve the effect on a battlefield. And in a relatively simple scenario, imagine taking that to a theater-wide situation or even a global, including orbital-type conflict. Very quickly, that just becomes incredibly complex and is absolutely going to require us to build out our machine learning ability and improve our decision speed. I think it's really exciting to see that the ability to bring battlefield effects to bear on the right target at the right time, or maybe the right 100 targets at the right time, and to predict how that's going to go, and to really maneuver inside the decision space of our adversaries of the future. That's the beauty of this whole concept, and really where we need to strive. I will say that there is a lot of hard work that needs to go into that. And while we learned a lot from the first two ABMS demos, there is a lot of deliberate work that is going to need to go into maturing each of the technologies that we're demonstrating with those now. And so we're looking forward to taking on that hard work in the future as we develop all domain capabilities.
Let me ask you about people. One of the challenges is getting the right people into the right jobs. And obviously for any military task, classification is also, having the appropriate clearances are another important issue. Are you getting access to the number of highly qualified scientific and engineering talent that you need at a time when the enterprise itself is expanding? As you said, you know, there's NGAD, there's 40 KC-46 work going on, there's B-21 work going on, there's T-7. I mean, each one of these programs, and that doesn't include all the weapons developmental programs we have and all the cyber programs we have and communications and others. Do you have enough people, and is the nation producing the kind of talent that you need to fill these billets?
Well, it's interesting. I read an article, I think it's been about 15 years ago now, about the imbalance in the production of STEM graduates between the United States and some of our potential adversaries. And it was a pretty alarming review of and obviously it became a quite a discussion topic back then. I'm sure you remember that. And frankly, STEM education really got a big boost out of that. And at each of the bases that I have served, there has been some great outreach with the communities trying to inspire the younger generation to pursue degrees in science and technology, engineering and math, with the idea that they will eventually use those degrees to contribute back to national defense. And I'm happy to say that I think we're beginning to see the benefits of that effort. We just need to keep it going. We have lots of graduates, recent graduates, with STEM degrees, and the beauty of what we do in the test enterprise, and frankly across the entire service, is we bring people in and we show them the exciting work that they can do, and they get hooked pretty quickly. It happened to me. It's happened to thousands of others. So I would say that we are really excited about the the potential, the future workforce, the energy that the younger generation is bringing. And I'll confess, 30 years into my career in the Air Force now, that I used to think I had all the good ideas, but now I sit down with our younger engineers, some of our younger operators, some of our younger testers, and what I'm finding is that they do a spectrum of great ideas far exceeds mine, and that's really a cause for optimism for all of us. This next generation is going to tackle these problems, and they're going to come up with new ways of making sure America stays safe against a rapidly evolving and very aggressive adversary. So a short answer to your question is I really believe in our people. They're doing great work, but we as a nation need to continue that emphasis on STEM, on growing the next generation of scientists and engineers that are going to develop this incredible technology and mature it and integrate it and help it to be the linchpin behind the whole concept of all domain operations.
Let me ask you two quick questions. One's a personal one, but let me take us back to NGAD for a second. Are you able to say where the test flight took place, or is that something that's not been released?
Well, as you know, Dr. Roper mentioned the full-scale flight demonstration that is part of the NGAD portfolio of technologies. I'm not at liberty to discuss any of the other details. What I will say is that we've heard great things about the way the demonstrator flew, as Dr. Roper mentioned at AFA, and we're very encouraged by its potential.
And so, as a first-rate flight test engineer, you're pretty pleased with how the program is performing?
Well, I'll say that one of the things you learn early on in your test career is none of this. We make a lot of things look easy, and when you start to dig into the nuts and bolts of it, you realize it's not. And I've had countless experiences over my 30 years where I thought a program or even a specific day-to-day test was going to come out a certain way, and we were surprised. So it still requires a lot of hard work. And when we're thinking about next generation capabilities like NGAD and architectures like JADC2, we have a lot of heavy lifting to do in front of us, a lot of work that needs to be done to make these a reality. But they have to. We have to make this work.
Well, I'm very, very excited, obviously, as we all are, to see the capability and especially fielded on a ramp. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about hypersonics, artificial intelligence, and machine learning. How is that? How are all of those elements coming together from your standpoint as people are looking to truly leap ahead capability?
Well, Matt, that's a great question, and the challenge of doing of addressing each of those technologies in the test community is we have to be ready to test them when they're ready to integrate into platforms. So we have to be typically 3 to 5 years ahead of the technology as it develops, which creates some real challenges. But we are looking ahead to each of these as potentially revolutionary technologies as we move forward in global operations. You mentioned hypersonics, obviously some amazing science going into development of hypersonic weapons right now. Artificial intelligence, we have just begun to scratch the surface on what that can do in terms of helping to generate with a new speed decision options for battlefield commanders. Swarming capabilities, you're probably familiar with the Vanguard programs of the Air Force Research Laboratory, and there was a great article that came out about the Golden Horde today, and just the ability to use swarming networked software to enable a swarm of future weapons to make decisions as they converge on a target area. It's really amazing what we're doing there. And there's so many others. There's been a big push to improve and integrate and enhance directed energy. We've seen a lot of exciting opportunities in agile software development, in particular as that relates to the software that's embedded in an aircraft, in an air vehicle. And I think we're going to see opportunities in the future to rapidly shrink that developmental cycle so that we can very quickly consistent with the E-series of future aircraft, very quickly get software updates into them and actually use some crowdsourcing techniques to do that. So it's an exciting time to be involved in all these technologies. Of course, as I mentioned, the challenge is we in the test community have to be ready to test when the technology is ready to integrate.
I don't let any test pilot go without asking him or her what they was the most interesting or the most fun aircraft they ever flew. You've flown 35 of them, even though you started your life in the 15 community. What was kind of the coolest thing you've ever flown at the end of the day and told yourself, wow, that was interesting?
That's a great question, and you know, every test pilot will have a different answer. You did key in on something that I think is really important. When you grow up in the aviation community, you tend to have an inseparable bond with your initial platform, and mine was the F-15E, which I flew during the two combat tours and then flew in flight test as well. So the opportunity to employ it in combat and then to actually develop new systems that we would introduce to the field in the test environment, to fly in the test environment, was absolutely thrilling. And I had that tour back in between 2000 and 2003 at Eglin Air Force Base, a great flying environment. And it was a really interesting time because of what we were doing. It was really when we were beginning to integrate GPS-guided weapons into our fourth-gen platforms. And so every day was something different. Every day we were dropping a new bomb or shooting a new missile, and it was just a tremendous time to be there. Very, very challenging work, but almost instant gratification every single day. And in 3 years' time there, I probably flew probably 200 missions that directly contributed to capabilities that we're still flying with today. So that was a real thrill for me. Maybe not one specific mission, but one tour that really gave me some satisfaction that we had done some good work for our country.
Sir, thanks so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate it. Always an honor and pleasure talking. Look forward to having you on again. There's so much stuff going on. I didn't even get to, the new kind of instrumentation and everything else you're installing all across the enterprise, but certainly would love to talk to you again. Thanks so much again. And we'll keep our fingers crossed and keep breaking a leg on the important work you and your team is doing.
Hey, thanks, Vago. Always a pleasure, and I look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks again.
And now a word from our sponsor, retired United States Army Major General Jeff Schlosser, who is the Executive Vice President for Strategic Pursuits at Bell.
We've been building creative and innovative aircraft, next generation types of capabilities for almost 9 decades. Bell is the company that can deliver that.
Thanks very much, sir. And thanks to all of you for listening. Please follow our daily podcasts and visit the Defense and Aerospace Report website to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook at Defense and Aerospace Report, and check us out on LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. Thanks again to Bell for their generous sponsorship, and we'll see you again tomorrow.